It's America's Most Haunted. I'm Eric Olson. Teresa Argy isn't with us. She's down investigating, as she has wont to do, being the haunted housewife and all. Down at Waverly Hills, she and Kathy are down there this evening, so they couldn't join us. They're very sad, but they send their best wishes to all of you out there, and especially to our guest, Devin Marble. And, Devin, I have to admit, they had never said your last name. And all the time I've been watching Fact or Fake, they never said your last name, you know? So
yeah,
when I saw Devin Marble, I thought, what a magical name that is.
Thank you. Yeah, don't take me for granted. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's good. And
my,
your current...
My
you are a spark plug. We were talking earlier today, kind of in preparation of the show, and... You know, I am never mean. Mean is not what I am. I mean, unless I am, of course. But in generally, I'm not very mean. And what I said is, which is really true, when Devin joined the cast of Fact or Fake, was it the third season that you joined?
That's actually, it was the second season. So the 13th episode is when I joined.
Oh, I see. All right. So, right, because they split them, sure. Yeah, I never figured all that out. We're now in the season 2.75 and all that. But anyway, when you joined, I mean, you really sparked things up, and you really changed the mood and the atmosphere, and you clearly had the whole tech side down. That was no problem, no issue at all. But you really brought in a lot more personality and a lot more pizzazz in that very first episode. I mean, it wasn't even just the episode. It was the first 5 minutes, and you were on the scene, and we knew you were there. So I'm telling you, we are huge fans. By the way, my daughter Lily is here with me, and she is very excited as well. So why don't we give a little intro here for those of you who don't know Devin? Yes, I'll read it. It's true, but I'll try to do so in my best radio voice. A key member of Sci-Fi's Fact or Fake and Haunted Highway teams, charismatic charismatic tech whiz Devin Marble has been fascinated with technology ever since he was a child, always having a natural understanding of how the cogs work. All right, I'll leave out the rest of it, and we'll talk about that in real life and in real time. But the bottom line is, Devin has come from, well, no one ever comes out of nowhere, but seemingly nowhere, to be a really key component, a star of Sci-Fi's Fact or Fake, and now Haunted Highway. And in fact, tomorrow night is the season finale, and what a great
season it's
been, of Haunted Highway. So welcome. If I haven't said that, Devin, really a pleasure to have you here.
Well, thanks a bunch, Eric, and thank you for all the kind words. I'm very excited for the season finale tomorrow. I know that Jack and Jael and Dana are all super thrilled. The season has gone really well. I think that it was one of those types of shows that we were hoping was going to kind of break the mold a little bit on the genre. You know, we all love Fact or Fake. We're all excited to continue doing Fact or Fake. But it's a different type of show. It's much more wholesome. And Haunted Highway, when I was first discussing with the network the show, it was very much like they were letting me know, this is edgier. This is different. And it was kind of a question of, are you sure you're willing to do this? Because I think I didn't even know myself quite how much work it was going to be, quite how in deep and that we get into things. Because it's us. We're shooting the whole show. And that takes a different kind of, different kind of eye. You really have to be cognizant. Otherwise, cause if we see something and we don't shoot it with our camera, you guys don't see it. So
it never happened.
It's a different kind of, a trigger inside your head where you always have to make sure that you point that camera wherever you're looking. And I had to go in and practice, which I owe quite a bit.
That was Lily's question, actually, and I guess I will ask it for her as she's playing all shy here now. You know, right at the beginning of the show, it states, everything you see was shot by one or more of the four hosts or four participants, investigators. And she wanted to know, is that really, really, really true? When you guys are out in the middle of the desert by yourselves, are you really there by yourselves?
We have a logistical support team that is, you know, not too far away, just in case, for safety purposes. But other than that, we really are the only ones shooting the entire show with two, I mean, I guess it's four cameras. I guess it's a bunch of cameras because we have all the GoPros. But in our hands, we each have two cameras, one facing forward and one facing back. And that's it.
Well, I think the immediacy of that really shows, and that really is what gives
right.
the show a different kind of feel. It really does have the, yeah, you know, you don't want to use cliches, but it really does have that kind of Blair Witch, you are there feeling. And there have been times, what comes to mind just off the top of my head, when you guys were out in the desert and Jael was
right.
having, or was it the desert? When Jael was staying in the tent. And
that was a swamp, actually.
The swamp, that's right. Well, that couldn't be much more different from the desert, could it be?
No, yeah, right. It's, you know, it's definitely not as dry as the desert. But
no.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And
you were in the middle of nowhere in them both. That's my excuse for mixing
them. Right, but I don't want to, for other people out there who constantly, you know, tweet me or message me about what to do when they investigate, how to investigate, and any tips and pointers. You know, even us who go out there in the middle of nowhere by ourselves, still that safety net, that just in case, you know what I mean? You get bit by a snake in the middle of nowhere, the last thing you want is to be completely cut off from civilization and not be able to get anywhere. So I don't recommend that anybody goes out and strands themselves anywhere to try to find something. I think that you can do just as, you know, be just as diligent out there and still have that safety.
We do need disclaimers, don't we? Yeah, I can imagine the sci-fi insurance company. Yeah, we want to send these guys out literally by themselves. There will be no one around. No, I think we need a support team within, you know, screaming distance, perhaps. But back to the point was, you really do get a very different feel. And what you pick, you know, TV, as Marshall McLuhan said, is actually a cool medium as opposed to radio being a warm medium, and I forget what all the other ones are, but it kind of always struck me because it seemed counterintuitive when I first heard it that TV was cool. But you do have that distance, but what you've been able to do on this show is really close that distance. There are times when I genuinely feel like, now I know I'm not really, but I feel like I am there with you and I am going through these experiences. And that is a really special thing.
Well, I'm glad about that, actually. That's, you know, I think it's a happy medium to try to make the show not too shaky and not too whipping of the cameras around. I know a lot of people who can't watch it because, just like they can't watch Blair Witch because they get sick to their stomach. Which is probably part of the reason why we have the tripods with the little GoPros that we stick around a lot to kind of mix and match a little bit and do as much as we can set up cameras. But yeah, we really are trying to make the audience see that this is us out here, and we want to make you guys feel like, look, we've captured what we think is potentially evidence, and it's just us. So we want you guys to see that, to feel that, to have your own opinion about it, to just disagree with us or to agree and go, I'm seeing what you're seeing, and yes, and no, I disagree. And I think that kind of conversation is really exciting to have a show be able to make that conversation, you know? I think a lot of times it's just all questions. And I think that if we can get people to question us and really have an opinion about what's happening, I think that's the appropriate conversation to have, especially when it comes to paranormal, because I'm a skeptic. Don't get us wrong. Jael and I are super skeptics because you got to have that kind of point of view when you're growing up. And you see something, you know, well, let's see if there's a natural explanation first before we jump to any conclusion. And when you rule out
there is,
a natural explanation,
right?
I'm sorry?
Because more often than not, there is.
Well, exactly, and there absolutely should be. I mean, I think that if we just jump to the conclusion that this is paranormal, period, and let's move on, it doesn't really answer any questions for the audience. It's not very, I don't know, it just doesn't seem very truthful. But if something happens, and the first thing you do is you start going, okay, how'd that happen? That could have been this, that could have been that, that could have been this. How realistic are those things? How likely is it that those things happen versus something paranormal? which should be a rare event.
Well, of course. And for, I don't know if it's the majority anymore, it seems like things have, attitudes have changed really quite a bit. I think even just in the last 10 years or so, I'm not sure if it's something that's linear, it's probably cyclical. There have been periods certainly in, you know, modern history where spirituality or the unexplained or what we now call paranormal have been very popular and people have been very interested in it. But it sure seems like in the last 10 years or so, it has cycled around again. And now with all these tools that are available via the media, and I mean that literally tools, but then also the outlets of the various TV shows. I suppose it started with Ghost Hunters was, I guess, maybe the first one, at least the first real popular one. And, you know, so there's so much more involvement, and people see kind of the nuts and bolts of how these things go. And, you know, but still, even today, I guess it's at least half people don't believe in the paranormal at all for various reasons. And so, you know, you're starting from a base of skepticism. I mean, for me personally, the way I approach it is simply look for the natural explanation first, because certainly almost always there will be some form of natural explanation. But when you can't find something, can't find that, or in rare instances where you feel you really do have some sort of tangible proof of something that is not natural, then have an open mind. That's my approach. It seems about the way you go about it, although I certainly don't want to put words in your mouth.
Well, you know, as you know, Factor Fate, I came on board as the tech specialist because I really have a technical background. And Bill and Ben are such phenomenal resources, just because they know so much about their field. Ben specializing in UFOs and Bill specializing in the science of everything. I constantly am, even when I was on the road with Haunted Highway, I found myself calling Bill and going, "Hey, so what do you think of this?" You know, and they're just such an open book and resource that they've taught me a lot. So starting out from a technical standpoint, I think is similar to starting from a science background, because you really try to find a natural explanation for something. There's so much about the world that we don't really have an explanation for how that works, how that moves, you know, how the temperature changes here and there, how fog works versus mist, you know, versus steam, versus all these different things that the Earth can produce. And a lot of people attribute to, you know, ghosts or apparition. Same thing with light. But the great thing is that when you can have a little bit of a knowledge background in those things and have those resources to be able to ask the tough questions on the spot and to review that footage with technology and to run tests and all that, then you really get to rule out a lot of evidence or supposed evidence. But it does leave a very small pool of very compelling evidence. And when that happens, those are the ones that I get really excited about.
Speaking of that, that leads us very neatly into what have been in your travels and your investigations with both the Haunted Highway and or Factor Faked. What have been for you the most compelling paranormal experiences or evidence?
I'm gonna have to say, I think that it was either the last episode of Factor Faked or the second to last one. And I just always refer to it as the disappearing woman. And it was in the UK, and I don't remember what the title of the episode itself was, but it was a woman who was in the UK with her husband, and she disappeared in her bed. She just kind of sunk into her bed, and it was captured on IR footage. And she was missing for 13 minutes, and her husband was sleeping right next to her. And then she reappeared. That is the most compelling case. I don't know. I guess maybe it's just my favorite. There's lots of compelling cases, but I toss and turn at night sometimes thinking about that one.
That is weird, isn't it? that's a head scratcher, I'll tell you. Yeah, I certainly remember that. That was very strange. Now, didn't you guys? Was that the one where you guys kind of recreated, that possible effect using kind of mechanical things that would have lowered her if, in fact,
yeah.
it had been faked?
Well, what we do is on Factor Fake, it's kind of a system. We always try three things. We try, natural explanations, then we try some sort of misidentification, and then we go, okay, let's just go all out. Let's pretend like these people really went for broke and just built a contraption and did something crazy for attention is normally the purpose behind or the reason behind someone doing something like that. And a lot of times, they're kind of outrageous, and we get, messages from people being like, you really think that they cut a hole in their bed and had a hydraulic lift and you know what? Honestly, we're not saying that that's exactly how they did it. But what we're saying is that it's possible that they went to the lengths of something like that. And this is how we're doing it, to show you that it's possible. But that episode, to answer your question, you asked me what are some of the most compelling, which leads into the finale of Haunted Highway. Because
yes.
There's Fact or Fake. There's that episode in the UK where the woman disappeared into her bed. And the implications behind that being faked are kind of staggering. They would have to go to some pretty great lengths.
Oh, and expensive, too, wouldn't it have been?
Well, expensive, and especially considering we had the footage analyzed and there was no CG done to it. So you have to take into consideration
wow.
whatever happened in the camera.
Right.
So taking all that in consideration, and the fact that they're very compelling, and they weren't lying, according to our analysis, it's kind of a staggering implication. The second one is, I think everyone should be very excited about what's coming up in Haunted Highway. And I told you that I had a little bit of some teaser information that I was going to, give you. So,
yes, tease me, tease me.
If you have any questions about Haunted Highway, what's coming up, hit me. Because I just got the phone with the network literally for the last hour. I've been discussing with them, what can't I say, what can I say? And I'm excited. They've given me some pretty free reign.
Very,
first episode,
very
first
exciting.
Yeah.
Well, let's say what it is. It's just make sure everyone knows Haunted Highway, the season finale, the first season, is tomorrow night at 10 o'clock. And it's
10,
been
9 Central. Yeah.
9 Central, right. And now, is it you and Jael in both segments this time? I'm not, in case people don't know, this is originally Jack Osborne's show. Now, was it his idea originally?
I'm not sure how the whole kind of thing incepted, but I know that, yes, the way that this is all set up is Jack is kind of our team leader and kind of delegates which cases that we all agree to go on. And him and Dana pair off, and they go left, and me and Jael pair off, and we go right. And we convene over the internet or Skype because we're normally across the country from each other. And if you think about it, that's kind of the way Haunted Highway works. Is it's instant, it's immediate. It's, hey, we think we have some evidence. We're going to Skype someone right now, and we're going to drop send them the footage. We're gonna email them our evidence and have them analyze it right now. There's no lag. There's no wait. Because it's all right there in your face, taking advantage of technology while we can. So these last two episodes, the last episode and the finale, it is me and Jael doing all the cases. And, of course, there was Jack made an announcement that he's dealing with some personal, some personal issues with his MS diagnosis. So he asked Jael and I to step up to the plate and to take the lead for a little bit, which we were happy to do for him.
Very sad for him, and we certainly wish him the best and hope things turn around as quickly as possible. But it's a pretty great opportunity for you guys, too.
Well, we're very happy to take the reins for him, for sure. He's certainly a strong force, and we're excited to make a good show.
All right, so it's the two episodes are Silver City Ghost Town, and that's Silver City, Idaho. And I know when we were talking earlier, you had mentioned that if you were going to select your America's Most Haunted locations, that would come in for some strong consideration. And then the other segment, now, please correct me if I'm pronouncing this incorrectly, Shunkawarakin?
Yeah, it's a Native American term that we just ended up sticking to. There's a bunch of different names for it out there in what's Bozeman, Montana is where we went. And so a lot of people, when we were talking to them, they actually didn't know the name Shunkawarakin, but it's the origination from the Native American tribes out there way back when. So there's a lot of things, you know, people call it like a wolf monster, some sort of a beast, or, you know, what else do they call it? Some, like the Valley Beast, I think was another name for it. So when we interviewed people, we had to kind of use a gamut of names to try to get them all to the same beast. A lot of people didn't know the history of it. But what they did know is that it was killing their cattle and mutilating it, much like the chupacabra, and not eating it, just kind of mutilating cattle.
Right.
I heard the story. One of the most compelling things that brought us out there was some farmer years ago lost 100 cattle.
That is nothing minor, that's for sure.
That is not minor at all. And so, you know, we went out there to go find out what it all was about. So, yes, to answer your question again, what was one of my other most compelling pieces of evidence episode? I think it's coming up in the finale. I truly do. And like you said, America's Most Haunted Places, if you don't put Silver City, Idaho on there, it's got to be because you haven't heard of it before, which I had heard of it before. And it's a very small silver mining town, Silver City. And it is in the middle of essentially nowhere.
It's a ghost town,
only...
right?
Go ahead.
It's a ghost town in the traditional sense.
I guess, yes. I mean, there are people that live there. But so it's not...
completely
it's not completely abandoned. But there's a lot of abandoned buildings there. And what's unique about the buildings is that some of them are falling down still because it's there's not very many people there to renovate the town. And there's a lot of tourism that goes there, surprisingly, or not. But a lot of buildings are still coming down because there's hollow mine shafts that are like a spider web underneath the town. And all of a sudden, someone's porch just go down. But there was nobody living in that building. So I guess that's one thing that's unique about it is that the buildings that are from 1887 are that wood is, that piece of wood is from 1887. Hasn't been repainted. And so it's falling apart out there. But what's unique about the town and what makes our finale unique is that you can only access Silver City, Idaho, I think it's 3 to 4 months a year. Every other time of the year, you're either stranded there or you can't get there. And when I looked it up on our little GPS, we definitely had to use a road map. And a lot of people ask me, why are you guys using maps? People still use maps? Question mark. And the only answer to that is that we go to places where there's no 4G, you know? And
right.
Sometimes we need old maps because the roads aren't there anymore written on a map. And Silver City is an example of that because there's not a whole lot of signs to get there. We had to ask some locals. And when you Google it, you know, a little flag marker pops up in the middle of some peach-colored, you know, desert or whatever. And there's no roads. So you're like, okay, well, we need to go here, and I guess if we were flying, we could just fly to the dot, but we're not doing that, so how do we get there? And you kind of have to wind through the roads to get there, and it's a one lane, but a two-way dirt road to get to Silver City for about an hour and a half.
That, so, in this day and age, is pretty darn remote in the United States.
It is, and it's essentially, there are, I think, approximately 20 permanent residents. You know, we joked around that there were only 3 or 4 people that live there, but there's about 20 people that permanently live in Silver City. And I'm not really sure what they do for a living. I think a lot of them are retired. There's one hotel. And, ooh, I've got a fun fact for you, too. Ooh, this is an exclusive fun fact. The hotel that we investigated, one of the locations in Silver City, was also the place where we slept.
Oh.
We had to stay there because there was no other.
No place else to go.
There was no place else to go. And half of the hotel, one whole wing of it, is not stayable. It took me about 45 minutes to an hour to convince the owner of the hotel to let us go there because it was so dangerous. And you'll see in the episode what I'm talking about. And what's even more frightening and that nobody knows is that that hotel that we slept in, one of the rooms in the episode, there was a doctor who had died in this room, in this bed. And that was my room.
Oh, my.
So I had to sleep there.
You were committed to the cause.
Or I had to lay there with my eyes closed until morning.
Right, right. As opposed
to
sleep, restfully.
Another exciting fun fact about the whole town is that there's no electricity there, believe it or not.
Amazing.
And what I mean by that is that there's no conduit. There's no electricals running through the walls. These are all original buildings, even the houses. And the way that people live there is they all have solar panels that charge batteries.
The
batteries have these external wires that run throughout their buildings. And at night, they unplug the batteries, and during the day, they plug the batteries back in. And you can't even run a hairdryer, but they can run their refrigerators and their other electronics and appliances, so that way they can live.
Interesting.
And so,
what an interesting combination of old and new technologies.
Oh my God! Yeah, absolutely. But when you get an EVP, I'm sorry, an EMF, a spike on your electromagnetic field reader, in a location that's literally, you just pull one plug and there's zero electricity in the area. That's significant.
You know you have something.
Well, that's the idea, yeah. You know you have something you can't explain yet.
Wow.
So Silver City, I highly recommend visiting it. I think it's a great place that could definitely use the tourism. And what you'll find when you go there is a bunch of people riding out on their quads to get there and quadding back. And there's one little shack there called Pat's Whatnot Shop, and you can go in there and buy some little trinkets, and the hotel is half kind of a, you know, a museum, and the townspeople there are so nice. I even got a little tour of one of the buildings in the town. She says, would you guys like to go to the pharmacy? One of the ladies, a local there. And I say, okay, what do you mean? It's, you know, middle of the night. It's 2:00 in the morning. Well, what do you mean? Let's go to the pharmacy. And she says, well, why don't you come with me? And we go for a walk through the town. We happen upon this building, and we go in through the bottom, like the basement area underneath these floorboard kind of things, and we emerge into this room that is full of these apothecary bottles everywhere, brown and gray and yellow bottles that are half full, quarter full, empty of all of these different liquids. And it's a wall of clear shelves, and it's an original, untouched pharmacy from the 1800s.
Amazing.
And she lives upstairs, this woman. And I'm like, so upstairs of this, like, old pharmacy is an actual, like, normal living space. But below it, there's a dentist chair and really creepy and gross things like old abortion tools.
Oh, God.
And there's this one big bottle of rum. And I looked at it, and I thought to myself, oh, my gosh, this rum has been aging for
some well-aged rum, I'll tell you.
I gotta try this. And so I asked Lisa, I'm 21. Can I try this? I just want to taste it, you know? And she says, you don't want any of that. And I'm like, I think I do. She goes, no, you don't. And she's like, read the bottle more carefully. And after I finally got through all of this old, worn-off print, I read that I wasn't drinking rum. It was a cavity disinfectant for the dentist. She told me a story about a young man who found that, popped it open, took a mad swig, and then got really sick to his stomach.
I bet he did. But you know what? They could have performed dentistry on him.
He was germ-free.
What a crazy place that is. That's so cool.
Ooh.
Really interesting. When I was looking it up, researching it, there was a travel story from the New York Times from the 90s, and it does not sound like it's changed much at all in that time.
Oh, my goodness.
The description, descriptions sound the same. Yeah, did the owner die maybe like 10 years ago or something? The original owner?
There have been a couple of different owners, which is another thing that we investigated while we were there, because there's not really a whole lot of places to go, and these you know, people who have lived out there for so long, they like to stay in their home, and so when they pass, they usually pass right there.
That's old school.
Yep, and a lot of the mine shafts were closed off, but I will tell you that in our finale episode, we do discover something that we weren't necessarily supposed to discover, and found our way into an abandoned mine shaft.
Oh my!
Which is going to yield some very exciting results, I can tell you. And yeah, it's I tell you what, I if there's one thing that being the some of the scariest and you know just scary places in the United States and in some parts of the world, if there's one thing that's taught me, and that's to just I'm no longer afraid of the dark. Because maybe partly because you learn that there are so many natural explanations. And when you do come across something that you cannot explain, I don't know. I guess maybe it's just repetition, but I'm no longer afraid of it. So I would definitely go back to Silver City, and I recommend anybody who hasn't been there to go.
Amazing. Wow. Well, that is an excellent preview. I can't wait till tomorrow night. I'm chomping at the bit here. That's some amazing stuff. Well, let me ask you further. Let me just kind of take what you just said a little bit further. Have you come to a conclusion yet for yourself that paranormal activity is real, does exist?
My conclusion is yes, I think it's extremely rare. I think that there's so many different instances that can be explained, and so many instances, honestly, that may not be able to be explained, but only because we don't really understand the knowledge or the science behind that particular instance. It may still have a natural explanation. I think we're still learning about this world, but I would have to say yes, and I think that it goes down to the definition of paranormal and what you believe. Let me ask you, what do you believe is paranormal? What do you believe is the definition of paranormal? Is it an apparition? Is it an actual ghost? Or is it the dead that communicate with us? Or is it the connection of spirits and lingering energy?
Well, you have turned the tables on me, Devin Marble.
well, the reason why
paranormal, I guess, as far as just a pure, you know, linguistic definition, simply means outside the range of normal. So within that, we could be talking about cryptids, we could be talking about UFOs, and we could be talking about, for lack of a better word, spiritual activity. Your questions seem to be focused kind of on the spiritual activity side of things. Me personally, I have had a few experiences. It's actually been quite a while, which I'm wondering, you know, have I changed? Have I become more closed off? Because these happened when I was in my later teens and early 20s, the few things that have happened to me. But they were indelible. And to me, they seemed so real. And I just never really had any question that there was something to those that was caused by something outside of the range of normal terrestrial activity. And it's one of those things that I feel kind of to my core, like it's a kind of a different kind of knowledge. And then over the years, I didn't pay all that much attention to it, but I've circled around over the last several years. We started watching some of the TV shows, and then being just kind of that's the way my mind works, I really started thinking about these things and what are the implications and what does this mean? Because, I mean, if you watch any of the shows, the good shows, which would certainly include both of yours, for any length of time, there is evidence, you know, that appears to be, unless something is being faked, and I am not someone who thinks that any of the shows that are on the reputable networks and channels, and basically we're talking about, you know, it's sci-fi, it's travel, it's bio, it's only a handful.
There are people out there as well, you know, which... on Factor Fake, we ask that tough question to people, did you fake this? Because people do, I guess in a sense, in the small paranormal community, feel that they have something to gain from faking them. And then sometimes we'll get a video and we go, oh, this is from this guy. We know what this is going to be because he sends us the same thing all the time. You're right. But, you're definitely being, I think, you're softballing in the idea that people fake things. It's absolutely true. People fake things.
Well, sure.
It's unfortunate. It's unfortunate.
And I'm sure that's gone up. The incidence of that has gone up because there's so many more outlets now. You have TV and you have the Internet. You know,
smaller cameras, cheaper technology, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, right, and you're right, absolutely right. From the technical standpoint, not just the outlet standpoint, but from the technical standpoint, it's just so much easier and cheaper to be able to do these things. And people, there's so many more people who have that kind of technical acumen who can do those things. So, sure, you're going to have that. But, you know, assuming goodwill, which I do unless given reason to think otherwise, then
sure.
There certainly is evidence that I have seen on probably each of the shows, at least at some point, each of the main shows, that seems to me to be credible evidence. And I some of the theories that kind of, you know, they're kind of coming together sort of to form kind of what's going on in the general thinking today. And that's, in fact, one of the key things we're trying to cover in America's Most Haunted is what is the general thinking? What are the theories of these things? And it's interesting to hear and think about the difference between a residual haunt versus an active or a conscious haunt and to think of what those implications are. And then, of course, obviously you have the religious side of it. You know, it seems to me from the people I've talked to, kind of the TV stars of this genre, about half and half are believers in some form of a deity and some form of, you know, religion, and about half are not. And I find it really interesting that those who are religious believers seem to find that quite comforting in that, you know, what I'm finding when I'm doing this, you know, relatively objective activity here, we're measuring these things, we're using all this different equipment, technical equipment, you know, it's the temperature, it's audio, obviously recording, and video, and the thermal. Well, I already said that. And, you know, so we're gathering evidence, and you know, it's a relatively objective approach, and yet you know, of course, the implications are addressing kind of the deepest questions that humans have. I think this is a very exciting time to be alive. You know, on many fronts. Scientific front. Look at all that's happening in physics. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah, and I think that you've brought up some very important descriptive words, such as, you know, things being haunted. When I say that I believe that there's that paranormal aspect of our world and things are out there that are not explainable, I personally believe so much, as a spiritual person, someone who believes in energy and being connected, that it's not, I guess, in a sense, it's not paranormal. It's not odd to have an energy source inside of you that connects to another energy source that you may not be able to see, and for that to be there. I'm not sure but I'm an extreme skeptic when it comes to things that are supposed to be haunted. Claiming that a location is haunted by the depths of so and so, and it's destroying things, or it's aggressive, or it's bothering. And, I mean, I'm just not sure if a spirit that has passed on, if that would be an agenda that they would, you know, I kind of lean towards the idea that it's a little bit, I guess, for lack of a better word, arrogant of us as living beings to think that we're so, I guess, kind of important on this planet that if there is an external spirit that's passed on, that they still feel that we're important and they feel the need to come and communicate with us. I happen to think that if there is a beyond, and if when we do pass, this energy source inside of me does go somewhere else, that I'm probably not going to be concerned about my dog or about, you know, the cable bill or my apartment complex or anything else where I was, because I'm moving on to something different, right? So
exactly.
It seems like, I don't know, that seems kind of like a double-edged idea that they would be coming back. I mean, I guess there's this idea of unfinished business. Maybe. But that's, you know, I go into this world being a skeptic coming from a technological standpoint of finding an explanation for everything. But I'm open to the possibility of being completely floored because I believe in things that I can't explain because I'm wrong all the time, Eric.
I know what you mean.
And I'm wrong all the time.
I know exactly what you mean. All right, well, just to take it a little bit deeper then, with your technical background then. So it sounds to me like you have a sense that there is energy that is out there. So for you, is it something that's maybe not so much a personification rather than just something that's left over? I'm not sure I'm talking about the residual versus the intelligence so much as, you know, how is the energy expressing itself, and
right,
is it aware
right.
of itself?
Is it expressing itself in a white, shadowy kind of mystical form and in the shape of a person in front of you? And is that really happening? Like, is that the form that this energy comes from? Or is it something that we really don't know the purpose of? And I lean towards that, honestly, because if there's one thing that I think that I've learned is pareidolia is a word that's just not used enough. And it's, you know, when you look at the clouds and you see a baby and I see a turtle. And, you know, your mind will assign what you find familiar to something that you see. And it's so difficult to prove that something is real when someone says that they saw it. It's so difficult to disprove. Who am I to discount someone's feeling? If someone says that they were touched and they're frightened and they feel this, who am I to discount? You didn't feel that way. I can't do that to that person. I have to, you know, I can run a lie detector test or an LVA on them and see if they're telling the truth. But again, even if they are telling the truth, our minds are so incredibly complex that you can swear that you saw something. You can swear that it's real. You can swear that you felt that it will show up positive on a lie detector and everything. But that doesn't mean that your mind didn't project something for you to see that's familiar, that your mind needed to see for something that it couldn't explain for a moment. Such as, I think a good example of that is, oh my gosh, the word's escaping me, but it's the sleep, it's sleep paralysis.
Right, yes.
And
absolutely right. I think that's fascinating and explains a lot of things. Go ahead.
Yeah, a lot of people believe that when they're lying in bed and, you know, I hear stories about people saying they were being abducted or that someone was coming to abduct them or that they were being haunted because they were lying in bed and suddenly, you know, they were awake, they were fully cognizant, but they couldn't speak. Like they couldn't move, and they were paralyzed, and they were trying desperately, and they became frightened. And then they saw shadows above them in human form, like trying to take them and choke them. And it's an incredibly frightening experience. And, you know, a lot of the doctors in our world say, well, this is called sleep paralysis. And it happens to, oh, gosh, I can't try to get the numbers. It's like 70% of everybody, it'll happen to them once in their life on some level.
Oh, it's happened to me.
It's happened to me, too. And I was frightened when it happened.
Oh,
and it
terrifying.
Wasn't nearly as
it really
severe.
Is.
It wasn't
terrifying.
Nearly as severe as what I just described. But I was frightened, you know, because I was like, but that's not a paranormal for me. That wasn't a paranormal event. That wasn't a ghostly haunting or experience. That was something that I was unaware that was happening to me. And so my mind and my body assigned what made sense. And a lot of times that's influenced by entertainment, television, stories, things that are kind of, you know, all the stories that you, that's why sometimes we get a video on Fact or Fake and it's a little girl standing in a hallway in a white robe with long black hair draped down in front of her face, which is like, there's a movie out there like that, right? Isn't it The Ring or something like that?
Yes.
And someone presented it as evidence, and I'm like, see, now, this is exactly what I'm talking about. You've been influenced by
popular culture.
And exactly. And so you assign, you know, or you see a watermark on the wall, or you see mist, and you go, look, it's a girl with hair draped in front of her and wearing a white dress. And you're like, well, that was from this movie. If that's what you see, maybe you should rethink what you're really looking at, because I think that you're being influenced.
I think that's an excellent point, and I agree with you. I think the mind, and I think another term for it is matrixing. I've heard people use that, where you see what you want to see or what you need to see, and it's not a conscious thing. You know, you're not purposefully doing that to yourself, but like you said, the brain is set up in such a way that it looks for patterns, and it looks for things that are familiar, and that's why things like the Rorschach test are so interesting, is that the ink blots don't change, but the interpretations sure do, based upon the psyche of the person who's viewing it. And I agree with you, that really can explain an awful lot of things and a lot of experiences. I think part of that is why I find the audio so interesting, because it's there. You know what I mean? I mean, you're hearing that. I'm hearing it. We're all hearing it. Television audience is hearing it. So unless someone faked it, where does it come from? You know?
Yeah.
I mean, that's why audio to me is in some ways the most credible, because so much can be done to photographic images, so much can be done to video. Personal experiences are, as we were just saying, can involve all kinds of self-deception or just simply misinterpretation, wishful thinking, even hypnosis, even group hypnosis, things like that.
Sure.
Those are not unknown. But when you hear those audio, the really compelling EVPs, it's like I can't in my mind, and maybe you have something that I haven't thought of, where could those have come from unless they were faked?
You know, sometimes those are incredibly compelling. I mean, sometimes my mind will gravitate toward the explanation of, wait, sometimes we need to look up and see if there are any power lines, radio stations, something else that's going on. If you've ever turned on a walkie, when this happened to me when I was little, saved up all of my grocery store money or all of my chore money, and I bought myself $100 pair of walkie-talkies. They would go a mile way back when, 10 years ago.
Oh, I
was so excited for them.
Big deal, man.
And I thought that I was snooping in on the CIA, because I was cross-channels something or other, even a phone call caught in there at some point. And it was just, as soon as you start sending out AM, FM signals up there, and you start sending and receiving something, you're bound to get something.
Yeah,
and
you're right. The signals bounce around, for sure.
But maybe there's something to an audio recorder that is recording frequencies. Maybe there's something to it being able to record some frequencies that are inaudible to us until you jack it up and, pull up that audio splice and take a listen. Maybe not. Maybe it is some sort of residual energy that's hanging out and repeating the same thing over and over.
Do you have any thoughts on when you hear some of these that are actually conversations between the investigator, or they appear to be conversations between the investigator and the voice?
Class A EVP is what, Ben would actually play some form that he's captured himself. He's an incredibly valuable resource or something like that, because I absolutely know when Ben plays something for me, he goes, I recorded this, I absolutely know that he did everything properly and that this isn't him messing around and that he's telling the truth. But that brings me again to our finale episode. We traveled to...
Dun, da, da, da.
Oh, I'm sorry, not our finale episode. I just watched both of them. Our last episode, episode 5, when we went to Northern California, we interviewed this witness in a coffee shop. I don't know if you saw the episode, but he played back a recording of a small child telling us where his grave was.
Yes, I did.
And
I just rewatched it too, actually.
Now, when he played that for us, I was so floored. I drilled him. I drilled him like, who was standing around you? I made him play for me the I think 3 minutes before and 3 minutes after, I wanted to hear all the bodies that were in the air. I'm like, who was there? Who was there? What were the name? How far away were they standing from you? All that stuff.
You wanted the context.
Exactly. And when he described everything for him, I think there were three other people there with him. One of them was, 50 yards away, not even an earshot. Two other women were within 15, 20 feet of him. And he introduced me to them later, and I met them, and they didn't sound anything. They didn't have young little kid voices. Not to say that they couldn't make that voice, but the idea was that I couldn't see what was happening in that recorder on that day, and I had to go off this guy's word. And what's really exciting and compelling about his evidence is his story. And he is a scientist, and the guy, he is incredibly smart. He was flooring Giles and I with some of the things that he was talking about and working with rockets and all these amazing things that he has done. And I'm like, well, then why are you so interested in the paranormal? Because that excites me. When someone who, it just seems like the more educated people become, the more that they stray away from the fantastic idea of some of the, some religions and some of the spiritual claims out there because they lean towards the scientific explanation of something. And this guy, who had all the scientific explanations, was holding this EVP and saying, the reason why I started doing this is because someone close to me passed, and so I felt the need to see if I can communicate that. And when I started to get things that I couldn't explain, I decided to make this a full-time job of mine, and he seeks to answer questions for the people. He seeks to debunk. He seeks to go out there and say, this is scientific, this isn't this. And he goes, I want to play this EVP for you. And that's when we got that little child, and he played it for us. So to answer your question, I'm not sure how to explain that. I mean, because I had to trust that person. I wasn't there. But I wanted to trust that man.
Right.
He seemed so credible. And usually you can tell when people are
usually. Cursing. I think so.
Ben was a great teacher when it came to interviewing people.
Well, he's an FBI guy, right? Game.
Yeah, and just watching the eyes and watching their shifting movements and everything like that. And, I mean, he was remembering. He wasn't fabricating. And your mind and your eyes go in two different directions when you remember something versus when you have to think of something.
Right.
We weren't there for that purpose to investigate that EVP. But when I got that, I was surprised, and I believed him. I just don't know what to make of it.
Well, I guess that brings us back around to the concept of being an open-minded skeptic. There are people who would just reject these things out of hand because it just is too much of a conflict with their worldview. And I think that mode of thinking is just as outdated as those who think everything is paranormal.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think that is the net result of all the exposure, again, from the shows. And it's not just the shows. They're just kind of the tip of the iceberg. But,
sure.
But they drive the numbers. They drive the volume of people, and people become interested, and they go out there, and they learn about things, and they read books, and they investigate themselves, or they go to these various conventions and whatnot. So,
yeah.
There's certainly a kind of an old school kind of carnival, circus feel to some of it. And some things that to me are pretty sketchy do get lumped in with the things that I think are a lot more credible. But as you say, it seems like there's kind of more and more people lately who really do have technical backgrounds. They have scientific backgrounds.
Yeah.
They are logical thinkers. They are objective thinkers. And they think that something is there. I agree with you also that I think a lot of this will probably come to appear mundane in the future when we do learn more, as we always do, on the scientific front. There's just, we can't possibly know. We don't know about every kind of energy yet. And,
Right.
I mean, we just discovered, how many planets, how many exoplanets have been discovered just in the last few years? you know, with a brand new technology that they now can find these planets that are at least in many ways similar to Earth. I mean, there's been so many changes, you know, in knowledge and scientific knowledge just in the really recent past. You know, if you go back 100 years, I guess it's a little longer than that now for Einstein's huge breakthroughs. But you know, approximately 100 years ago, think how much things have changed. And then even in the last 5 to 10 years. How many discoveries?
The ability to break down into quantum physics. I mean, we're not even talking about things like quarks, which are the small molecules dancing and flitting about all by themselves in between the atoms and you know, when you zoom in as far as you can on a quantum, you know, microscope, and they're dancing. And the crazy thing about those energetic, they change when you look at them. You look at them, and then you turn your back on them, and they do something different.
Well, the act of looking at them changes them. That's the craziest thing to me. How can me, you know, the Heisenberg uncertainty, how can me looking at that change it? That's just so bizarre. What is the cause of
it?
Or how about quantum entanglement? How about quantum entanglement? What possible explanation can there be for that? That two particles that could be thousands or millions of light years apart are instantaneously affected by each other.
Right, right. Well, I'll tell
you what. It's mind-boggling. It really is.
I see that you got 4 minutes left. And
yes, and you were only going to be with us for a half hour. Gosh,
I really appreciate it.
I really appreciate your giving the time. What a fantastic conversation. Yeah, we're Lily and I here, we are big fans. Want to reemphasize that, and you know, it seems like you're kind of just getting started in this media career, but man, you've really taken off and you're doing a great job, and I think you're very credible and fun to watch. And we wish you only the best, and just have things just keep going on for you and keep plugging away. I think sky's the limit.
Things like Haunted Highway and Fact or Fake take a massive team of people with the same, you know, wonderful descriptions that you've given me, such as Jael and Jack Osborne and Dana
Love
Wichman.
Jael. Holy cow.
And
love Jael.
She's phenomenal. And I learn from her all the time as well. I mean, everybody's comes from a different background. And just with the finale coming up, it's taken a lot of people to make Haunted Highway what it is, which is hopefully what audiences are seeing it as, just raw footage of us trying to go out there and ask the tough questions, going into investigations, not looking for evidence, but looking for the explanation. I think if there's one piece of advice I give people is, when you go out on a ghost hunt or whatever you want to go out there and search for yourself, don't go looking for evidence. Go looking for an explanation and let the evidence find you. And
I think that's exactly the right approach. I could not agree more. If the evidence, quote unquote, presents itself, then you know that, or at least you have a better sense that, you know, or the odds are better that there really is something there, if in fact your first priority is to find the natural explanation, which, again, there usually is. Our poor 8-year-old, who's not here, son, he's got a terrible earache, he watches the shows too, although kind of fretfully, and we're feeling so bad lately because being 8, you know, he's started to take some of this stuff to heart, and he hears a noise, you know, in the house. I mean, we're having to explain to him over and over again, Alex, houses make noise, you know, refrigerators and pipes and wood settling and wind and animals, those things all make noise. You cannot assume every single sound is either paranormal or else a axe murderer coming to get you. And we're trying to get him turned around, I think we maybe have to wean him off some of the paranormal shows for a while, the poor little guy. But,
if Alex were here, and maybe there's some young kids listening right now, but I would tell him that what's made me less scared is going around that corner when I think I hear something, you know, and go and look for it, because as long as you don't look under the bed, the boogeyman will always be there. You have to go and look for it. And that's the best way, in my opinion, to not be scared anymore. I think that you'll find that there are lots of explanations for things out there.
Well, that is excellent advice. And what an interesting parallel to quantum uncertainty that is, isn't it? You just kind of described Schrödinger's cat experiment, you know. If you don't look under the bed, he's always there.
Yeah, absolutely. Well,
terrific. Well, thanks so much, Devin. And we will watch with bated breath the final two segments, final episode of Haunted Highway. And, of course, we will absolutely look forward to the next season of Fact or Faked. And we certainly hope. Any word on Haunted Highway? Do you know? Is it going to be back? Have you heard anything yet?
That is part of the reason why I'm doing as much as I can to get viewers excited about it. Because this is a new show for sci-fi, and with any new show on any network, they are waiting to see how well it does. And so we really need everybody to, if you like the show, or if you aren't sure if what you see on the TV show is real, find someone else that has never seen it. Make them sit down and watch it with you and get their opinion on it. Or if you just love it, share it with someone else tomorrow night, finale night. And if you're interested in Poltergeist Activity, I can put a little teaser out there and let you know that tomorrow's episode potentially will not disappoint you.
Excellent. Perfect ending. Thanks so much, Devin. Have a great evening. We will be watching. I will certainly do all I can to get as many eyes as possible on the show tomorrow night. And as I said before, we really wish you the very best and think you're really great talent and enjoy watching you very much.
Well, thanks. So let me just do a quick little plug. If anybody out there would like to have a conversation or tweet with me, my Twitter handle is at Devin Marble, or you can find me on Facebook, /Devin Marble, F-O-F.
And you have a site, too, right? DevinMarble.com.
I do. I need to update it. I haven't updated it since Haunted Highway because we were traveling so much, but yes, I do. And that will link you to all of the social networks and everything, give you the
Perfect.
Whole team's Twitter. So check us out.
Perfect.
All right. Thanks,
thanks
Eric.
So much, Devin.
Take care.
Hope to talk to you soon. Best wishes.
Absolutely.
Good night.
Bye-bye.